This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
This is The Other Side of the News with Bob Fetrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
This is The Other Side of the News, and we've got an artist with us in the studio, and why don't you introduce her, Connie?
Yes, this is Chanika Svetvilas, and she, I guess I can let you tell about your own work, but I've seen some of your video work, and I know that you also do sculpture and poetry, and that you have a show that's open currently.
Yes, I'm currently in a group exhibition called Believe at Fresh Air Gallery. And Fresh Air Gallery stands for Artists in Recovery. And the gallery exhibits the works of individuals affected by mental illness and or substance abuse disorders. And through the art, they educate the community and work to break down the stigma of mental illness and substance abuse by bringing focus to the artistic vision. And Fresh Air Gallery is a project of Southeast Recovery and Mental Health Care Services. And this exhibition is ongoing until June 1st. And I'll be giving an artist talk with the three other artists on June 1st, which is a Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. And the other artists, including the exhibit, are Jackie Rovner, Elizabeth Beitel, and Anne-Marie Dujardin.
Cool.
In this exhibit, I have video of my performance work, charcoal drawings, and poetry. And I can share the poetry later if there's time.
Great. So I've actually seen some of your video work. Would you want to talk about that? Kind of describe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the video work is of my performances. I also do video work, which are artworks in themselves, which I see as the performance of the camera and my relationship to the camera and me in space. The performances are really about returning the gaze as someone who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder since the age of 25. And I had an episode here in Columbus. I moved here in 2010 to attend Ohio State University Master of Fine Arts Sculpture Program. I think the move was such a big change that it triggered something within me that created a manic episode. And I was hospitalized for 10 days. It was quite traumatic to recover from the episode and to readjust, but I did quite well in the program. And I, as a part of the process of my recovery, I was compelled to perform. And one of the performances I did was at the Knowlton School of Architecture, the building on the Ohio State campus. And when I was manic, for some reason, I was compelled to clean in public spaces, including public bathrooms. And when I entered the space, which is a gorgeous space, beautiful light, and these steps, which are almost like a stadium seating, and I just took a broom and I just started sweeping the steps. And so convincingly that the building manager asked if I was with maintenance. And I also brought in two huge trash bags full of leaves, and I spread them out on the steps. And it became a pun on words, because in the space, after sweeping, I also sat after spreading out the leaves, and I chanted "Be" over and over, which was about trying to simply be the person I am as an individual, and not being about the mental illness, but just being myself, which the bipolar disorder is a part of my identity, but doesn't define me. And when I was in the hospital, I remember that this word "be," about just being myself, was something that I wrote. And another patient was drawing leaves, and then we put them up on the bulletin board, and we said, "Look, together they make believe." So it was a pun on words when I did the performance. And
yeah, I've seen this piece, and I like it a lot. So it shows you putting the leaves out on the steps, and then kind of sweeping them up.
Yes.
But then I think at some point you reverse the tape.
Yes.
And as you're sweeping, it's actually putting the leaves on the steps.
Yes.
And as you're watching it, for me as an audience, in the audience watching it for the first time, your brain doesn't really catch on at first that they're doing this repetitive sweeping motion, but the leaves are actually coming up on the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a really interesting effect, mm-hmm. which I think, you know, kind of maybe demonstrates to others, like, some of the experience of people with mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was almost magical to see how the leaves would return back to the broom and be attracted to it. So it's sort of like you can never leave that condition. It's always with you.
But it's a condition thought to have been with many great artists throughout history, at least in retrospect when we look back. It's argued that if you took bipolar or mental illness out of the arts, it'd be very few great works of art. Many appeared to be obsessive compulsive as well. When you were manic and in during this process, were you consciously reflecting? And it sounds like you were integrating it into your art, that you were aware of your condition and working it in. So, you know, the whole notion of being there too, not really Buddhist, like be here now in any sense, but a different sense of being. What did that feel like?
Well, a lot of people have asked me if I remember when I was manic, and I think in a way you're sort of hyper-aware, so I don't have that distance when I'm in that episode, but then afterwards I can remember some moments. Like I remember being outside and wanting to walk home, but for some reason I kept walking backwards. Like I was like fighting myself to get home. Luckily, I was able to get home, but the mania continued. Part of the recovery process that, for me, which is really an ongoing process, has been to process it through my artwork, and which can be seen at Fresh Air Gallery. And I also speak about stigma. One of the performances that you can see is me performing with caution tape, so the tape that you see at construction sites. So I enroll, actually I'm in caution tape too. I have it wrapped around my forehead and crisscrossed over my chest, and then I'm walking with the caution tape and unroll it, and then I re-roll it on the Ohio State University campus. And the reason why I enroll it on the Ohio State University campus is because I had experienced stigma there, because I was in the Master of Fine Arts program, and I thought I was working in the program quite successfully, but unfortunately, due to my behavior when being symptomatic from bipolar disorder, I was told that I could not continue to enroll in the program, and so I'm no longer at Ohio State University.
So were you literally cautioning yourself, Ohio State, other people who may share the same condition? How do you interpret the caution tape?
Well, I had it wrapped to myself because I wanted to acknowledge that there's also stealth stigma. The statistics that's thrown out there quite often is that 1 in 4 Americans have a diagnosable mental illness. And then at the Ohio State University, there's only about 2,000 students that are registered with the Office of Disability Services. And the highest number of students that are registered with the Office of Disability Services are those with what we call invisible disabilities, that they're not physical disabilities that you can see. So they're attention deficit disorder or a mental disorder like learning disorder like dyslexia, or a mental disorder like bipolar disorder. So there's a lot of self-stigma, too, I think, that prevents students from registering with the Office of Disability Services. And then I do feel that stigma exists where because of the stigma, I was not allowed to continue in the program because the potential in me as a student, I feel, was not, that awareness did not exist. And I also think it's important to be vocal about these issues because I think stigma on campuses exists not only at Ohio State University, but other campuses.
Yeah, and in other areas too, right? There are a variety of ways that people can be insensitive to each other, and especially if it is kind of an invisible disability, people may not understand it or realize that they should be sensitive to it.
So your situation now is you're not at OSU, you're doing this at Fresh Air, and were you always into different art mediums here? It sounds like you're not only doing the video, but you're doing poetry and
sculpture.
Well, my past work was painting, sculpture, and installation, and performance is very new to me, and it was something that I was compelled to do through my experience with bipolar disorder.
So did it literally come out of the manic stage?
I would say so. It was a way for me to process the experience.
Now, this, if you're bipolar, it suggests that sometimes you're manic, sometimes you're not. You might be in a depressive state. Do you find that you work with different art mediums when you're in different stages?
Well, first, I never say that I am bipolar. I just say that I have a diagnosis.
With bipolar. Well, yeah, because actually it's tremendous controversy. What exactly, you know, is it a catch-all diagnosis? Is it somebody who maybe is hyper aware and in a creative period? Then, you know, there's some people that argue we're not real sure that a lot of people are diagnosed with it. But the question is, you know, what exactly is it? And do you really want to control it? Because in your case, it sounds like you're very incredibly productive during that period.
Well, I think it's different for everyone, and I want people to be aware that people function at all levels, and people with bipolar disorder do live very productive lives. And I think, although it's great when someone like Catherine Zeta-Jones comes out and says that she has bipolar disorder, but then I think people forget that it shouldn't be about these exceptions or the fact that, you know, you can be potentially very artistic, but just that we're everyday people, and that just like anyone else, we live with different conditions. I think that there is a tendency to look at any kind of disability as in terms of a deficient medical model, which means that you just see it as a detraction or something that is a deficit, when really it's the social conditions that surround it that can create that disability. And and to really just embrace who we are, and that, I mean, for me personally, I feel that bipolar disorder, that experience has really given me profound empathy, and I think that's something that I hear from a lot of people that have a mental disorder.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. You know, everybody's different. We all have something that makes us unique and different. Mm-hmm. I have diabetes, for instance, mm-hmm. and, you know, for a lot of people that might see that as a mark of like being unhealthy. I actually feel that it has made me pay more attention to my health and diet and lifestyle, and that that, you know, having diabetes isn't necessarily an advantage, but it's made me more aware of things that affect my health, and I feel that I'm very healthy, and maybe my health is even enhanced by having that awareness of what I should be eating, because the things that are healthy for me as a diabetic are actually good for everybody. It's good for everybody pretty much to exercise and to eat a low sugar diet. So I could definitely see how having a diagnosis of bipolar or having gone through certain experiences could enhance your awareness of other people's feelings mm-hmm. and being more aware of certain things, and that that could also really influence your art. This is The Other Side of the News with Bob Fetrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Community Radio. And we're talking with an artist who's got an exhibit now at the Fresh Air Gallery. The accent on your name, I want to get it right.
Chenica.
Okay, it almost sounds Native American, but obviously not the last name. Chenica, when you go to these other artists, do you guys talk about what their situation is? Does it blend together with yours?
Well, none of the artists had met each other prior to the exhibition, so it was a wonderful opportunity to get to know each other.
Who put them together?
That was Kim Glover. She's the curator of Fresh Air Gallery.
So are all of the artists in this exhibition women? It sounded like they're all women's names.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah, that's neat. So what are some of the other artists doing? What kind of work are they showing at the gallery?
Well, Jackie Rovner does these amazing, very intricate collages, and she uses glitter and collage, and she also uses text, too. And Elizabeth Beitel, she creates digital art and these really beautiful digital landscapes with all these colors that blend together in these marvelous ways. And then Anne-Marie Dujardin, she has quilts, and then she also has some gestural paintings and also drawings, and she's even sold a piece recently.
Great, yeah. You know, one thing I just love about art is the symbolic language, how you can convey messages to people, to others, without using words. And it can sometimes hit, strike a chord or create an idea in something, in somebody that you otherwise couldn't communicate just trying to speak to them. So that's very exciting.
And we're speaking with Chenica, who's got a showing at the Fresh Air Gallery. Where's the gallery located again?
Yes, the gallery is located at 131 North High Street, and that's between West Long Streets and West Spring.
But you're going to be there with the three other artists. Was that June 1st?
Yes, Friday, June 1st at 4 o'clock, we'll be getting an artist talk, all four of us.
And can you give us a small preview? What do you intend to say to people who show up there to talk to the artist?
Well, I'll be talking about my performances, and I have one video piece that's a video projection on the floor, and it's actually me rolling around in charcoal. So it's about trying to escape the examined gaze. I chose charcoal because I had a suicide attempt where I had ingested sleeping pills, and part of the process of pumping your stomach is using charcoal to absorb the chemical substances. So they're very personal works. And then I have charcoal drawings too, which one is of an enlarged image of a prescription bottle, and another one is an enlarged image of my hospital band. And it really speaks to the weight and presence of these images and how generic the treatment is as an individual. And I think in terms of generic, a hospital ban or prescriptions, that can relate to anyone who has had an experience in a hospital.
Now, whose gaze is it? I'm sort of curious. You're examining a gaze. Who do you perceive looking?
Well,
and what are we examining?
Yes,
what are you examining, since it's personal?
Well, specifically, I was thinking of the medical gaze, but also I'm questioning the viewer in terms of their perspective. How do they view these conditions? What is their position?
So is it literally feedback when you're examining their gaze when they're watching your work? Is it that much of a loop and ongoing?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the performance is a loop, so it is like I literally can't escape.
So is the analysis of the gaze, is that kind of at all confrontational towards people who might be gazing upon you, kind of looking back at them?
Well, it depends on which video you're speaking about, but it is in some way confrontational, and especially the one with caution tape, and that's related to my experience with Ohio State University, because I did feel discrimination on that campus.
Yeah.
Does the medical gaze create the stigma that you were talking about earlier, or is it other forces?
Well, I don't think it's just the medical gaze. I think when there is prejudice that exists, that does create the stigma when people don't have that awareness and when they're judging based on their attitude rather than being inclusive.
I think you had some poetry. Would you mind sharing some of that with our listeners?
Sure. It really does speak to my experience and would like people to listen with their hearts too when they hear these poems. So the first one is No Words. No words. Words form from thought. Written words do not have the same meaning when spoken. Words only describe. There are no words in pain and sorrow. Words can give hope, comfort, and joy, and take it away. I want to understand how to find words to accompany my feelings. Hope became my sanctuary when I had no place to go. Kindness and generosity from others supported my well-being. Words will describe my remembrance. The second poem I wrote was written after I saw a poster of the World Trade Center towers at Travana Cafe, and occurred to me that the owner would never think that someone would walk through their doors who had experienced PTSD from 9/11. So I was really affected by seeing this poster. Who cares? When did we stop caring about each other? Was it when we went to school and were teased as children pleased? Was it when friends no longer remained friends? Was it when technology spoke for us instead of our mouths? Was it when we locked ourselves behind closed doors? Was it when we walked by instead of turning around to see the anonymous face behind us? Was it when we stepped on the ground and failed to notice the life on this earth and beneath its surface? Was it when we brushed by nature without feeling the hand of God? Was it when we felt only our own pain and forgot the pain that surrounds us? Was it when we forgot that our being is supported by everything on this earth? Answer and act as you please, but remember that your action lives on and recycles over and over again.
Cool.
The question of these reoccurring events, it sounds like that sort of loop again that was in some of the art you were describing. Are you trying to in any way invoke any sort of predictable reaction from your audience? If they're seeing you in this endless loop captured, do you expect there'll be empathy and they'll identify with you? That would be what I got out of the poems. It's sort of, you know, that, you know, a connection, sort of almost a universal connection you're trying to create through whether it's the videos or the poetry.
Well, I don't think I can expect an outcome, but I can hope that I'll provoke
what is
the
your
viewer.
Hope?
Well, definitely I do want there to be more empathy out there for people who have a diagnosable mental illness or identify with mental difference.
But it almost sounds like you're suggesting modern society creates almost a certain form or diagnosable mental illness in all of us if we're unaware of mm-hmm. our feelings mm-hmm. in the earth, and we may be trapped mm-hmm. Away from those feelings mm-hmm. by technology itself. Is there something about the modern condition that mm-hmm. You think may be destroying our humanity?
Well, I think it's really important that we recognize how interconnected we are, and that really creates a sense of community, that it is our relations and our interactions. And I would tell my students also when I was teaching that art is also about making conscious choices, and I wanted to really instill that into them.
I would say that I sure feel that way, Bob, that technology and society is very alienating, and that has a big effect on people. Experience trauma because of the alienation and other events in our lives. So I certainly feel that way.
Yeah, the screen mediates too much of our interactions, you know, with all the texting and email, that we lose sense of each other.
Who's behind the text message when you're texting somebody and clicking send or emailing somebody? It is notoriously, I think, easy to offend somebody by email when if you spoke to them face to face, you would be able to see their body language and the expression on their face as you're speaking with them. And if you're about to say something that hurts someone's feelings, you may know ahead of time, whereas if you're sending them an email or if it's mediated somehow, we don't have that same human connection with others.
Now, what was it like to teach art? What was your approach? Were you mm-hmm. critical, or were you trying to get your students to have some cathartic breakthrough? Was it communal?
Well, it's definitely a huge responsibility, but I did try to really emphasize that sense of community. I would tell my students, just remember there were people here before you and there'll be people after you, and to think of your conscious choices, like even when they're placing a bag, you know, think that someone might trip on it, to be careful of that. But I really wanted to instill a sense of critical thinking for them to be aware of their thought process and for their voice to come through. I think it's really hard to teach in general because you don't want to be heavy-handed, and you want the student to have their own voice, and you want them to be independent learners.
Could your manic behavior, in part, could it be that stigma, that glance, in part be a society that really isn't that tolerant and really isn't aware and that accepting of a broad range of mm-hmm. of human activities? Mm-hmm. It seems like we have a tremendous urge, and there's tremendous process in medicating everything, which mm-hmm. Maybe the problem may be lack of tolerance. And
yeah, I mean, I feel like we have a very intolerant society that is very violent in a lot of ways. You know, just the, you know, the incidences of torture that happen,
which in me schools. Seems to be the real mental illness,
schools.
Right? Is that the Pentagon?
But that's, but you know, so yeah, that is, I guess, ill behavior, but it also causes a lot of trauma in others, the fact that we have that violence in our society all the time.
Well, I think we need to get beyond tolerance and get to acceptance. I think sometimes people can get to tolerance, but then there's never that sense of inclusion and understanding, which is where acceptance is.
But there's a lot of things we seem to accept that we shouldn't accept. Torture,
abuse,
violations of human rights, the largest prison industrial mm-hmm. complex mm-hmm. on the planet, the largest military industrial complex. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's people who may be paranoid, but we're spending $50 billion a year spying on our own citizens. So, I mean, the person who's paranoid may be very actually rational.
Yeah, so could you tell us again about your art exhibit, the place and the dates?
Yes, the group exhibition is Believe, and it's at Fresh Air Gallery, which is located at 131 North High Street between West Spring Street and West Long Street. And then there'll be an artist talk with all four artists, including me, Chenika Swefilis, Jackie Robner, Elizabeth Beitel, and Anne-Marie Desjardins on Friday, June 1st at 4 p.m. So I hope you'll join us there.
Right, and until then, people can go to the gallery and see your work?
Yes, the gallery is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. This has been Chanukah Svedfilas with us here as our guest. This has been The Other Side of the News with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.